So today I'm going to present about soil carbon stocks and greenhouse gas fluxes from unrestored Sierra Nevada meadow ecosystems. First of all, I'd like to start by thanking the funders, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the California Air Resources Board, without whom this project would not have gotten off the ground, as well as our wonderful and many project partners and the field support that I've had in conducting this research. So to begin with, Sierra Nevada meadows, not only are they beautiful places to work, this is a good place, reason to study them, but also recent legislation in California limiting carbon emissions and creating a cap-and-trade marketplace has created interest in restoring meadow ecosystems and with the possibility of soil carbon sequestration as a result of restoration. As we've heard earlier in this session, the idea of restoration in soils is something to be debated. But the question is, can we restore this process? Can we, this process of carbon sequestration, can that be returned to these ecosystems? Throughout the Sierra Nevadas, there are 330,000 acres of meadows. It's estimated that 60 to 70% of those meadows are in some state of degradation. Generally, when we talk about meadow degradation, we are looking at disconnected floodplain hydrology, and this alters the biogeochemical cycles in these ecosystems. Before we can understand what impact restoration practices may have on the biogeochemical cycles of these ecosystems, we need to understand what's happening in the degraded meadows. So this brings us to our questions of how much carbon is there in degraded meadows in the Sierra Nevada, and what are the rates of greenhouse gas fluxes from these meadows? As I mentioned earlier, this research is being conducted in association with a large Sierra Meadow and Restoration Research Partnership. Through this partnership, they're studying meadows up and down the Sierras. I'm going to focus today on this talk in three meadows up in the Northern Sierra Southern Cascade Range. So let me begin by introducing you to these three meadows. The first meadow is Upper Goodrich. This meadow, as you can see, has suffered from significant hydrologic disruption over the years as a result of logging, road construction, channelization, overgrazing. Now there's also conifer encroachment coming into the mix as well. Despite this long history of anthropogenic land use, there is still significant amounts of carbon in the soils. And as you see over there in the bottom right-hand corner, the amounts of carbon decrease with depth, as you might expect. The other thing that we find in this meadow in particular is about 50 centimeters of degraded peat below the surface, indicating that at one point this was significantly wetter than it is right now. The next two meadows are Greenville and East Creek Meadow. Greenville Meadow is the one right in front of us here. East Creek is off to the right over there. And both of these meadows have also have a long history of anthropogenic land use, including grazing, road construction, logging, farming. And there is a large soil carbon stocks in these meadows as well. The patterns with depth are not quite what we might expect. This may be because of the fact that they were tilled and farmed about 50 years ago. In each of the three meadows, we sampled greenhouse gas fluxes using the static chamber method at 24 points in a grid with 30 meter spacing between points. We also sampled soil carbon to a depth of 1 meter and several environmental variables, including temperature and volumetric water content. In these ecosystems with lowered water tables and high amounts of soil carbon, we expect that the presence of aerobic soil conditions following the hydrologic degradation will result in large carbon dioxide fluxes, methane uptake, and nitrous oxide uptake as well. So let's begin by looking at carbon dioxide. We measured fluxes of all three gases every 3 weeks for about 13 months. As you can see in the top graph here, we have fluxes on the y-axis here and dates along the x-axis. You can see that our fluxes varied seasonally, and as we might expect, soil temperature and water content were the two variables that most greatly controlled the fluxes, and at different points in the year, each of the variables seemed to be controlling it more. For example, in the summertime when we had low water contents and high temperatures, we still had relatively low fluxes. In the winter, we had higher water content. That wasn't limiting, but the temperature then became the limiting factor at that point. Together, throughout the year, soil water content and temperature combined explain 56% of the annual variation in CO2 flux. And as we see in the springtime, when water content and temperature were neither of them were as limiting at that point, we have very high rates of fluxes, our highest getting up to about 12 micromoles per meter squared per second. So in conclusion, yes, CO2 emissions from these meadows were rather large, as we expected, on order of 30 megagrams of carbon dioxide per hectare per year, and 70% of those fluxes occurred between March and June. So now we'll move on to methane. For methane, we saw seasonal dynamics in the fluxes. We saw uptake during the summer months and production during the winter and spring months, with a clear dividing line between uptake and production, and that dividing line, again, corresponded with changes in soil moisture. In methane, actually, soil water content alone explained 44% of the annual variation in methane fluxes. Another thing just to note here is we had only methane production when the soils were most saturated. As they began to dry down even just a little bit in here, it quickly switched to uptake again. So even though we had both uptake and production of methane, overall, we had a net consumption, a small net consumption of 1 kilogram of methane per hectare per year. Moving on to nitrous oxide here. With nitrous oxide, we saw a lot more variation in the fluxes, although they did generally hover around zero throughout the year. We saw hot spots and hot moments of nitrous oxide uptake and production in the summer months, especially following rain showers. Similar to methane, we saw seasonal patterns of uptake and production with clear dividing line that also was associated with changes in soil water content. However, unlike methane, nitrous oxide production continued into the springtime as water contents decreased and didn't need to have soil water contents quite as saturated to have production for these of nitrous oxide. And soil water content alone, again, explained 26% of the variation of nitrous oxide. All of this indicating that with restoration, as we change the amount of soil water content in these meadows, there may have great implications for greenhouse gas fluxes. So again, when you look at the annual nitrous oxide fluxes, we had uptake and production. Overall, we did have net production, just a small net production, though, of 0.84 kilograms of nitrous oxide per hectare per year. Taking all three gases together and accounting for the fact that these three greenhouse gases are not all created equal and they have different global warming potentials, even when we take that into account, carbon dioxide is still the elephant in the room, and it's a rather large elephant. So total carbon dioxide production is roughly around 30 tons of CO2 per hectare per year. As you can see, there is actually tiny amounts of methane uptake and nitrous oxide production, but they're so small, even accounting for global differences in global warming potential, they don't really even register. This brings us to the question then, are degraded meadows, do they have a carbon problem? Is this an issue? Looking at that annual emissions of about 30.4 tons of CO2 equivalent per hectare per year, just to kind of put that in perspective, that's the same as amount of carbon dioxide is sequestered by 11.6 hectares of forest in 1 year. So 1 acre of these meadows is sequestering emitting as much carbon dioxide as is sequestered by 11 acres of forest, meaning that these three meadows in total are emitting as much carbon dioxide as is sequestered by almost 3,000 acres of forest. So where do we go from here? We kind of have an idea of what's going on in degraded meadows, but we need to know how does restoration change the biogeochemical cycles in these meadows, and what is the target soil moisture following restoration for carbon sequestration? Will methane production offset carbon sequestration as we get into these more saturated soil conditions? Our initial results from some of these restored meadows indicate that it may not, but we need to do more work to really see how that carbon budget will change with restoration. Also, we can explain up towards 50% of the variation on greenhouse gas fluxes through these abiotic environmental variables, but is that the glass full or is that glass half empty? Can we explain more of the variation by looking at some of the biological factors going on or soil chemistry? And how will these, how will soil chemistry and changes in microbial communities and differences in microbial communities change as a response to restoration? And that's all I got.
Do we have time for questions?
How much the carbon coming in, you compared it to forest, how much biomass carbon would be recovered or a normal meadow, take up? What you showed was just the degraded.
Yeah.
How does this compare with a healthy meadow in the sense both of up gas going off in the sense of how much carbon is going in?
That's a good question, and we are, the next phase of this research is to look at the restored meadows and to see how, what is the greenhouse gas balance and the overall carbon balance in these meadows once they are restored. As far as in a natural pristine state, kind of hard to find meadows that are in that condition up there, so not really sure. If anyone knows of any, we'd love to study them, but we're a little more constrained in that one. So, but stay tuned, the next chapter will be what happens after restoration.
I missed why they're degraded meadows. Is it because the plant, they were farmed at one time, and the plant community today is different than it was before?
They're considered, the hydrologic disruption is generally what you're looking at here and why we're classifying them as degraded meadows. So in these meadow ecosystems, you should have kind of this top part here, it's what the meadow should look like, with a connected floodplain covering most of the meadow. But because of when you have different land use practices that lead to head cuts and channelization, then you have these meadows that are kind of at one point were sort of a sponge holding water are quickly drained. And instead of having anaerobic soil conditions, you get aerobic soil conditions as a result. But you have large carbon stocks as a result because of the legacy of the anaerobic soil conditions. So these particular meadows, it was a combination of logging, grazing, road construction, channelization, all sorts of things that led to that disruption.
We have time
for one more. That 11-to-1 ratio, was that system-wide throughout the whole range, or just site-specific for the ones that you studied?
Just for those three that we studied. If you look at the average of those three meadows, the amount produced was... 11-to-1. We have more data coming in from the rest of the Sierras, and so we'll see whether that ratio holds for the rest of the Sierras. But at this point, that's what we have.
Thank you very much.